add one. So the whole thing, basically, is the four memory locations. So one of the memory locations would have the two least significant bits. So that's 4 bytes, and which byte would have the smallest address? Now, since this is the big endian architecture, that means the big end, the most significant part of the word, would have the address of the word. That's the definition of big endian. So this would have the address that would correspond with 00. And in other words, this would be the address, which is the address of the word, which is 81. And this would go in the next one. 81 plus 1. Right. I was looking at this here. Actually, I should look at one word. This is for double word, but actually, we are actually talking about this single word, which is 4 bytes. So this is why we will have an ADD1, and this is what we will have in ADD1 plus 1. So each would be 1 byte, 2 hexadecimal digits. Any questions so far? And let's look at question 3. Now we have the ALU bit slice, which has this multiplexer. And here is operation 0, 1, 2, 3. So we have these 4 choices, and we select one of them. And here is the AND gate. And here we have the MUX. And this is A inward. And then we have another MUX. And this is B inward. and this is line A, and this is line B. And these go to different places. But the question is, how do you do the NOR operation? And we have seen that this is a NOR operation, because this is equivalent to this. According to De Morgan's law. So in order to perform a NOR operation, you have to invert the inputs of this. And so what we need to do is to bring this one there, bring this one there. And what we need to do is to make sure this one comes out. And that means that this should be a 1. This should be a 1. And what about here? This should be 0, 0. They have two lines there. And the other part of the question is that if this is 0 and this is 1, find out the output, and it's just a bar operation. Oh. Okay. 1, 0. Okay, now this looks like the question we need to get here. Okay, it looks like I'm still thinking about the taxes. That takes a lot of work. So I should have done it earlier. But I have gotten into this bad habit. I hope you guys don't get into that habit of waiting until the last moment to do something. Okay, so we do get a NOR of 1 and 0, and OR would have been 1, and now of course it would be 0. So this would be 0. So that's what that is question 3A. And question 3B. Okay, that's part B. And basically, you have to show how these units would be connected. So here is carry in. Now I'll have to write rather small. And here is operation. So you have to show the three least significant slices of the ALU. So here is the operation thing coming in, and also coming in are those two lines, B invert and A invert, those two lines. So B invert is here. So this is B invert and this is A invert. And that's carry in. Now we have some lines, data lines coming in. So here we have A0 and B0. And we need to have another line coming in, and that is the set line. And here is the result. Now the second one looks basically similar. you have A1 and B1 coming in. Control lines are basically shared in exactly the same way. Carry out of this goes into carry in of this, right? And this is of course the control line, so this will go into all of them. The result 1, and this line would be 0. Remember, set on less than. That way, that should cause the output to be either all zeros or 1, right? The set on less zero and set on less than will either give you all zeros or it will give you 1, which is all zeros and a 1. And this 1, of course, is the least significant one, right? So sometimes you want a 1 here and 0 on all of these, right? So this is the 0. So this will always be 0. So, and here, of course, this is given. And let me skip the other one, which that is exactly like this. And here is your result 31. And here is the set line. And here is overflow. And watch this here. So, set on less than, the result would either cause this line to be a 1 or this would be a 0. And of course, when you are doing set on less than, all the corresponding lines are 0. This incidentally illustrates the principle of stacking up these components together. That means you connect them appropriately, and they are designed so you can fit a number of them, and so you can make a 16-bit ALU, or you can make a 32-bit or a 64-bit ALU. So basically the same principle as your Lego blocks. So they are designed so that you can fit a number of them on top of each other, and they have appropriate hooks, so they just connect. Assemble into binary, that's the next question. And this is a 32-bit format. And looking at the format, now this is an ARP format. I'm sorry, it's not ARP format, it is what do we call it? It's the I format. I is for immediate. So I format is the one in the middle, which we have here. So we have the operation code, which is 001000. And then we have the two registers, so register 0 and register 1. Register T0 and register T1, I should say that. And because T0 is register 8. Yeah. Okay. And, okay, how does minus 1 look like?
A lot of ones.
Not all ones, right? Yeah, that is one of the interesting things about two's complement arithmetic. That is worth remembering. And the easy way to remember that is that if you add a 1 to minus 1, you should get a 0. Right? So add 1 to this minus 1 and you will get a 0. And then we have Ludwig T0. Okay, what? Which format is this? Now, is it again the I format?
Yes.
That's again I format, right? And so that is 100011. And now we have the register T0 and the register S1, and they must be represented in the right place. Now this is a part where you have to look it up. That's kind of hard to memorize that. So, okay. Okay, where does T0, so do we first mention T0 or do we first mention S1?
S1.
So we first mention S1, right? And S1 is 17. Is it right? Okay, so S1 is 17. So that is 16 plus 1. And this is T0. Now, incidentally, the definition you will find, okay, is somewhere on this card here. We are looking at Ludwig. Yeah, see here, if you look at Ludwig, it says RRT, that's the destination. So RT is the destination, and M, RS plus sign extension. So RT is the destination, and RT is the second one. So that's, you have to kind of look at that up. And finally, offset, which is 0. Questions on that? Okay, what do these instructions do? LUI what do these registers do? Register 29 is the stack pointer. Register 31, return address. Register called high. And remember, register called high is not one of the general purpose registers. We have discussed that in the class. It's a separate register, and it is basically used for multiplication and division. So for example, when you do a multiplication, top half would be in high and lower half would be in the register called low. Because rather than multiplication takes double the space if you're using the full regular multiply instruction. Not just new instruction. Register V0 generally used for returning value from a function. Okay, question 5A. What do these instructions do? Load upper immediate, register T2, 0, 1, 2, 3. So if this is register T2, what will happen? So it loads the number 0, 1, 2, 3 in the upper half. And the lower half contains hexadecimal zeros. and GR, dollar sign RA, is of course jump using the return address so that you can come back to the calling function. So that's how you return. Part B, move, you can do this way. And load address. Now, load address is a very useful pseudo instruction. Whenever you want to initialize a pointer, this is a convenient pseudo instruction. And that you can do this way. Okay, let's look at question 6. Questions on this one? They represent 15 as a single position floating point number. And as you know, number 15 we can write as 1111, which is of course 1.111 multiplied by 2 is 2, 3. This is supposed to be a decimal point. For some reason, when I studied decimal numbers, I was taught that I should put a decimal point in the middle. But apparently the convention, I guess, is different, because I guess most of you probably put the decimal point here. I guess that's the standard convention, but unfortunately I have the old habit and I keep putting it in the middle. So I guess my teacher, he said that, well, if you put it in the middle, then you wouldn't confuse it with a period. But anyway, I guess you should always know from context what it is. So, and we need to represent this. So, sign bit is 0, and next 8 bits, so 127 plus 3, and that actually 127 plus 3. The same thing as 128 plus 2, right? So, and that will come out to be this. And the rest of it is here. And we of course have this as a normalized number. So this will become the hidden one. And then 111, 0, and everything else would be 0. And part B of this. What is the smallest positive denormalized number? Now, as we have seen, they came up with the denormalized numbers to allow us to represent really small numbers. Because what would happen if you would always assume a hidden one here, then that will cause a problem with respect to what is the smallest number you can get. But with denormalized numbers, so here's a denormalized number, and of course, by looking at these zeros, you know that this is a denormalize the number. And now there is no hidden one there. And of course, we have to, it cannot be a zero, because we said the smallest positive number, so a one there. And we had here, as you know, 23 bits. So how much is this? So this is 0 multiplied. Okay, this is, if you had a 1 here, which is 1 on this side of the decimal point, so that would be 2 raised to minus 1. So this is 2 raised to minus 1, 2 raised to minus 2, so this is 2 raised to minus 23. So 2 raised to minus 23, that's the mental part of it. And there's no hidden one there now. Multiplied by 2 raised to minus 126 by convention. So the committee came up with this specification. When it is denormalized, it has to be 2 raised to minus 126. And again, the idea was that they wanted you to be able to represent numbers fairly uniformly distributed when you have the small denormalized numbers, and which should give you 2 raised to minus 149, which is about 1.4 multiplied by 10 raised to minus 45. So that looks like a really small number, right? So you can have a number as small as this with single precision. With double precision, you can make it even smaller. Okay, part C. We have two numbers. One of them is 15, and 15 happens to be 1.111 multiplied by 2 raised to 3, and other number is 3, which we can write as 1.1. Of course, here we are, we know that this is supposed to be binary. So numbers are actually, of course, they are represented in this type of format. But just for convenience, to illustrate the multiplication process, let's represent the numbers this way. You could represent them this way also, but it will just will take more effort. So first thing to do is to align the exponents. We want to add them. So we take the smaller number, which is this one, and we align it. So we have 1.111 multiplied by 2 raised to 3. And after aligning it, it is going to become 0 point. So I want to make it 2 raised to 3. That's what we mean by aligning the exponent. And the idea is that we make the exponent same, so we can add the rest of the number. And so how do we make it? So 2 raised to 3, that means we move it once, move it twice. So there we have move it once, move it twice, 0, 1, 1. And now we can add. So we add the mantissas, including this one. So adding, we get, what do we get? 1 plus 1 is 0, carry out of 1. 1 plus 1 plus 1 is 1, and a carry out of 1. 1 plus 1 is 0, and a carry out of 1. 1. And that one is 0. And this. And of course, this is still the same. And of course, here we have the answer, but it's not normalized. So you have to normalize it. And that means we need to fix this by, we need to adjust this by taking out the power, one power of two. Oh, I'm sorry. The other way. This. Taking out power of two from here and putting power of two here. Questions on RC? Now, as we have seen that hardware for multiplication, actually for addition, for the point addition, we have seen the hardware. And if you look at the hardware and trace through what it does, so basically that hardware will do these things. And I think that's the last question. Yeah, number seven. So, let's do question number seven. And after that, this, we will start with, continue with performance. And we want to look at some interesting things in performance. 7A. This program calculates the factorials recursively, and you have to fill in the missing information. And then, and there are some clues in the program. So, and I guess you could use those clues to fill that in. So, things like, okay, maybe I'll just write the things that go in there and not write the whole thing. So, you know that you need to adjust the. In the past, I used to have questions like, write a program that does this, which is actually, which makes a good question. And but the thing was that everyone was answering the question in a different way. So those can be very hard to grade. So we have to trace through the program and find out what is that you are thinking of doing. And some of the students will find some rather strange way, which would be strange but still correct. So I thought, why don't I just simplify this and give you the structure? And so and of course, those are, I guess, there are different skills. So you should be able to write programs, that means write complete programs from scratch. On the other hand, you also need skills in reading what others have written, which is actually a more difficult skill, writing somebody else's, reading somebody else's programs and following it. So, now we could still, maybe in the final, we could have any questions which might ask you to write a program. And if you have it, I will probably not make it too big. Because if it's too big, it becomes hard to grade. Example of load address where you are setting, putting something into register A0, which is an address, and the address is prompt. And the idea is that this system call will print the prompt, and the way it works is that you have to give it the beginning of the string. And end of the string would be detected automatically if the string is a null terminated string, if it ends with a zero. Now you have to do this before that needed to go in. Now we will then continue with the any questions. So if you have any specific questions about grading, so before leaving, so come up here and such as a simple question, I can answer your question or whatever needs to be done. So you will be there. Now we are looking at performance and so we have seen the concept of CPI, average number of clock cycles executed per instruction, which we have seen is a rather important concept. And people have made progress with CPI. It has been going down, and with more and more parallelism, it could be one or even less. And we are talking about the last time, and I had mentioned about the trade-offs, and we had talked about the benchmarks. So now it's time to look at the performance trends. Now, before we talk about performance trends, here is something from mathematics. Okay, how many of you expect to be a millionaire before you retire? Okay, raise your hands. Okay, most of you should be able, if you want to be. A lot of people are happy being, not having money. But if you want to be a millionaire, most of you should be able to, by the time you retire. Actually, you probably would like to be a millionaire right now.
Yes.
Rather than when you retire. What's the point of having a millionaire when you retire? But anyway, so let me see how ready you are for being a millionaire. Let us see, let us assume that you have, let's pick a number, maybe $10,000. And you invested in some investment. And let us say that it pays 6% a year, that investment. So how long it will take you to double your money? Okay. Answer? Okay, who knows answers? A quick calculation? I mean, there's an approximation, there's a famous approximation, which says, it doesn't work, it's an approximation, so it's not very exact. And basically, according to the approximation, you take the number 72 and divide it by the interest rate, which is 6%, and that will give you the number of years to double your investment. So if you are earning 6%, it will take you 12 years to double your investment. Now, as I said, this is really an approximation. It works for 5-7%, the numbers, but the interest rate around that, it works actually quite nicely. It's fairly accurate. But of course, it will not work if there are other numbers. Now, this will brings us to a general question of things that grow exponentially. So remember, when you have money in the bank or some investment, so whatever you earn in a year, that becomes part of your capital, and you earn interest on top of that, and so on. So your money grows exponentially, okay, not linearly. And in fact, that is the same thing that is true in technology. So if you say, if somebody says that the progress will be by a certain rate, it actually will grow exponentially. So for all the major things, for example, Moore's law, which is a best-known example of these things, it is an exponential law. So let us look at the exponential laws, which is applicable, which is used for modeling technological trends, and it actually applies to investments. And basically, let us say, you start with some initial value, let's call it x0, at time t equal to 0. And let us say, at every duration, let's assume you have m years. Now you can talk about months also, but let's take years. Let us say m could be 5 or whatever. And let us say every year, the quantity x, which is a function of time, gets multiplied by a factor alpha. So first year is multiplied by factor alpha, next year multiplied by another factor alpha, and so on. And so that is the exponential law. Okay, now here's an example. And in fact, this is the Moore's law. And this is the law that was initially given by Gordon Moore, who was one of the founders of Intel. And he actually formulated it differently. So he said that number of transistors on a chip double every years. Okay, can you guess what is this blank? Okay, let me see. What did he originally say? Originally he said that number of transistors on a chip will double every year. That was his original formulation back in 1965. It was just a kind of a conjecture. And of course, he had very, very little data, but that was a conjecture. And later he modified it to double every, okay, we are going to take it double every 1.5 years. Now if you look at the plot, and no, actually we are not going to take it 1.5 years. Now that is what most people say. Most people say that number of transistors on the chip double every 1.5 years. That's the usual statement of Moore's law. However, if you look at the plot for Moore's law, and if you so you will notice that this is the one that fits much better. So we are going to take Moore's law to mean that the number of chips in a transistor, on a chip, a single chip, double every 2 years. Okay, so what is the value of alpha? So let's calculate the value of alpha. So by how much does it go? What is the multiplicative factor for a year? Okay, so let's do a little bit of algebra. So let's calculate the value of alpha. Okay, how about this? M is equal to 2. Okay, now how can we calculate the value of alpha? Okay, how about this? Okay, let me rewrite this. Okay, let us see if you agree. It's a little bit of algebra, not too hard. Do you agree with this? So if you plug in the values, or if you will just say, so in our case, in this example, for this Moore's law, what we are saying is that alpha is equal to, this is a factor of 2, and in 2 years, right, in 2 years, goes up by a factor of 2. So what is alpha? And you can easily calculate alpha to be 1 point, in fact that is square root of 2 in this case. So that actually is easy to calculate. That is 1.414. So every year it goes up by a multiplicative factor of about 1.414, or it will go up by about 41% every year. But notice this is compound interest, right? So it will grow exponentially, not linearly. So if you are if you meet an investment counselor or people who try to persuade you to invest in whatever kind of accounts they have, so they will say that look at this magic of power of compound interest. How many of you heard that expression? So the magic of compound interest. So basically, it says that your money will grow exponentially. Like this. So remember that it is not linear. So if you want to find out how long, now let's say you are an engineer, and if you want to find out what would be the state of technology and state of the market at a certain point in time, then you should not extrapolate things linearly, but rather you should extrapolate things exponential, provided the law is valid. And that is a little bit of a question. Is Moore's law going to be valid at 2 years, 5 years from now? Okay. There is a little bit of question these days, but so far it has handled very well. And some people, I was talking with one of the other professors in our department, and he has recently looked at some data, and he was saying that he sees some sign of it slowing down. But actually, if you look at the curve, it goes up, there's a little bit of up and down. So I don't know if any minor swings are indicative of a long-term saturation. But of course, there is a thing. Now, some people have a theory that anything that grows exponentially, that type of trend cannot last forever. Which also makes sense. But unless you see a significant trend away from the observer trend, I guess the presumption should be that the trend still holds, unless you see significant, statistically significant evidence the trend has stopped moving. Any questions? So given, you should be able to use this equation, and sometimes it might require you to use log. So make sure that you can use this equation. So if I ask you how long it will take for something to go to a certain value, you should be able to solve this equation and find out the answer. Any questions? Now this is for number of transistors on a chip. Now what about performance, computer performance? That has gone up exponentially. Okay, let's look at some numbers here. Incidentally, the rule of 72 I mentioned here, it will not work when your interest rate is so high, 41%. So the rule of 72 wouldn't work. But if you work, your interest rate is like 5, 6, even 10% works quite nicely, but not 41%. So you will never earn 41% on any investment. Now there was of course an analysis done by Professor Schiller of which university he's at. And he has looked at the stock market return for I think 100 years or so, and he has come to a conclusion that on the long term the stock market will return 6% beyond inflation. So subtract inflation, and you should expect that stock market will be 6%. But of course, this on a very long-term trend. Incidentally, the Moore's law is applied to number of transistors on a chip. Now, people have extended Moore's law to way back before even the semiconductor technology came into existence. And they have found that the law works even when you go back. So the starting point here is, when did the VLSI chips come out? Was that in 60 or so? 1960s?
58 was the transistor, wasn't it?
So 58 was transistor, but when was the IC chip?
I thought it didn't come out until late in the 60s.
Yeah, something like that.
When they put like 3 transistors on a thing and called it a chip.
Right. So this of course applies to a chip. But people have found that equivalently you can go back to several decades. So back to the days of tubes and electromechanical relays and so on. And they have shown that you still get that nice curve. Oh, incidentally, I should mention, there are 2 ways this is shown. Here is time, and here is, let's say, whatever attribute you are looking at. What should we call this? Let's call it count. Whatever you are counting. So this is how the exponential plot will look like. But a lot of times, what people want to do, so instead of plotting it this way, you can plot this. You can take log of that. You can take natural log if you like. Same thing. And that is equal to log of x0 plus m times the log of alpha, where m is time. notice that here, now this is a linear relationship. So if you will plot log of the count, and here is time, you will see that this looks like a linear curve. And the slope equal to log of alpha. So you will see both kinds of plots. And next time I will mention, people have observed similar things about clock rate, memory capacity, memory cost, disk capacity. So there are these exponential laws that apply to a number of things. So I will mention about some of them next time.